Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's a mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
Indeed, it is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are here live on a Tuesday night, the real Tuesday night Titans, not like Booker T used to say, the new TNN. This is the new Tuesday night Titans, ladies and gentlemen, episode 112. I am here always, along with Derek, the Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing great. The new TNN. I remember that like it was yesterday, before Spike started and blah, 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 and WWE had their time with them. Always belonged to the good old US network, as far as I'm concerned.
The new TNN. Yeah, absolutely. Fun stuff, as always. We are here. We are live. Episode 112. It's good times, fun times. And I'm so happy that we are once again here, just having a good time as always. And we are celebrating another episode, having a good time as we do all the time, because it's party time, all the time, as Adam Rose would say. We'll get to Adam Rose here. We'll get to Adam Rose in a little bit. But
that's what we do.
Until then, because that's what we do. That's what we do, ladies and gentlemen. As always, having fun here at Pancakes and Power Slams, episode 112. Join in live chat. Call in live, 347-884-8452. Start off with the first trivia question of the night. Where was Starrcade 83 held? And Derek, you cannot say anything. Where was Starrcade 83 held?
Easy.
Let's get on. Well, what was that? Are you cheating again?
No, so that's an easy question, crying out loud.
Easy question. Hopefully the Pancakes and Power Slams, the hashtag PanSlamites, will go on and answer that. And answer that more quicker than Derek does, because Derek's always just clawing and scratching to go and answer the question. So somehow we need to stump Derek and allow other people to
good luck
to answer the question. 112, ladies and gentlemen, let's have some fun. Action-packed Raw starts off with a Bray Wyatt in-ring promo. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole wide world in his hands. He's got the whole world. of a sudden John Cena comes out. They go on and keep going about their last man standing match. Derek, do you care about this last man standing match at Payback?
No, yeah, not really. I kind of forgot about it until you just said something.
Not to mention that that's the second most promoted match of the WWE right now, behind the sixth man. And you forgot it. You watch. You're an avid wrestling fan. You're a fellow, you're a Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent. Even with all of those accolades, you still somehow managed to forget about the last man standing match. How is that possible, Derek?
It just doesn't ring that much of a bell. It's not going to be, it's just another throwaway pay-per-view as far as I'm concerned. Wyatts are just kind of lame ducks as far as I'm concerned. They make no sense. John Cena, I don't buy into the hype. I don't buy into the gimmicks. I just think it's kind of a throwaway match.
Yeah. Well, I can see what you mean by that. Honestly, I totally agree with that. I do not believe that. It's hard to believe that the WWE is still managing to make this something. And I understand that the point is to build up Bray Wyatt, but is it really building up Bray Wyatt? I mean, is it real? At the end of the day, when this is over with, does this ascend Bray Wyatt to main event level? Does this make Bray Wyatt a top guy? I would say no. I really don't think so.
I don't think he can carry it. I just don't see. I mean, all he's got is his little song, and he's creepy. But that's still it's predictable. You always know what's going to happen. You know what he's going to do. It's tiresome.
Yeah. I think Bray Wyatt's like a lost member of the Adams family. I think that's probably the best way to describe Bray Wyatt. He's creepy and he's kooky. All the rest of the Adams family song. That's what I feel about Bray Wyatt. Other than that, he's got the over in his hands. Yeah, whatever. I really don't believe that. That song's going to get old, to be honest with you. Just everything about Bray Wyatt, to me, is just going to get old. It just really is. I don't see him as a top guy. I tried my best to really hold on to Bray Wyatt as far as potentially being a top guy. But putting himself in a feud with John Cena, as much as John Cena for the past decade has been the top guy, I would say at least for the past nearly 10 years he's been a top guy. And he's helped some people. You know, his feud with, I would attribute John Cena and really catapulting or really ascending the career of Edge. I would say that John Cena had a very pivotal part in helping Edge's main event career. John Cena has helped people. He's gotten himself into some good feuds with the past 10 years, and he's helped people giving them that extra nod. I would even say CM Punk, to be honest with you. The whole pipe bomb promo with that was a feuding with John Cena. Before that, CM Punk was a part of was the leader of the New Nexus. He wasn't a top guy at all. Although he did win a World Heavyweight Championship before then, but he lost it by being forced to relinquish it by getting jumped by Legacy and backstage. So that goes to show how much they cared about CM Punk at the time. So he's helped, you know, he's helped some careers. I would even say when he was runner-up with Batista, when Batista won the 2005 Royal Rumble, and when Cena was runner-up, I would say that, you know, kind of gave a nudge to Batista's career even. So he's had his fair share of assisting people.
He assists a lot of people, and it's
I don't know, the John Cena thing and everything going on. It's just, it's kind of at a stalemate. And I watch Monday Night Raw, and I try to make the most of what I can get out of it. And I don't know if I've seen the WWE at this type of a, I'll say stalemate. I mean, really, Chris, how are you excited to watch Monday Night Raw anymore, to just be like, this is the show, the premier show, everything that's going on now is as good as it can be? And I'm not always going to be
question.
A WWE fan. I love Monday Night Raw, but I mean, it's just everything that they've been trying to produce lately has just been kind of boring and odd, awkward. Doesn't really relate to the wrestling fan. That, I mean, if you enjoy it, great, but if you question it, then you've got something to really express your feelings about and what's the future going to hold within the next. But even before 2015, what's SummerSlam going to look like? Survivor Series?
Great questions. As far as the question dealing with whether I'm excited to watch wrestling, I agree with you, honestly. As a journalist, I get paid to watch wrestling. But at the same time, you know, I've been watching wrestling all my life. Everyone knows that I'm an avid wrestling fan. And through, you know, there's been some deeper valleys than this, to be honest with you. But I've stayed through that. Through and through, I'm a wrestling fan for life. But here's the thing. This is what gets me. They have so much future talent that they totally need to be fully investing in right now. I think it was around WrestleMania 16 or so, 15, 16 era, where they, you know, it was the advent of Austin and just really the Austin Rock, Triple H, Mick Foley. At that point in time, they weren't necessarily main event superstars, but at the same time, they really spent some time investing in the new breed of superstars. And this was around, 14. I would say 13 and 14, more than anything, was more the advent of the new breed of superstars. Austin, Rock, Triple H. And those were the three names of the future. And they were mid-card guys at the time. And the WWE spent some time, and I know that Austin had a background, you know, and he was a top mid-card guy in WCW before he came. But still, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's automatically have a slot, especially in 97. He didn't automatically have a slot in the main event. And, you know, as far as Triple H is concerned, in 95, 96, he was losing to Dust Wunderkind Alex Wright at Starrcade when he was Jean-Paul Levesque. So he definitely didn't have a promising future in the WCW to come in and be someone of importance, and Rock as well. Rock was in USWA as Flex Cavana. So he didn't have a promising future. I mean, he didn't have an automatic slot in the main event as well. So you know, around 97, 96, 97 era, they really, you know, spent some time really pushing a new breed of superstars. And those three names were the three names of the next 6 years or so. And that's what they should do now. Right now they have Cesaro, they have Daniel Bryan, they have Roman Reigns. And that's the problem. They are so stuck on John Cena trying, you know, he's the default everything. And the reason why I had John Cena win the title in my article that I wrote last week is because I was really waving the white flag, because I know they're still going to make Cena the default top babyface. And at this point, I agree that Cena needs to put people over, but when you either have chemistry or you don't. Rock, Triple H had chemistry. Austin Rock had chemistry. Triple H, Austin had chemistry. Kane, The Undertaker had chemistry. Even Brock Lesnar and Eddie Guerrero had chemistry. And so Cena and Edge had chemistry. Jericho and Benoit had chemistry. So you either have it or you don't. And John Cena and Bray Wyatt just does not have it. You can't force a square peg into a round hole. And that's what the WWE is doing right now. And we just had some we just had a report on wrestling.com that this Raw was the lowest for Coliseum, by the way. Good job, chat room. But this Raw was the lowest Raw of the entire year, and this has been the lowest Raw since last October. So 8 months, this has been the lowest Raw in the past 8 months. And, you know, you can't blame Daniel Bryan because he wasn't there. A lot of people are trying to throw it on Daniel Bryan since his reign has happened. But, no, I mean, there was no Daniel Bryan. The main event was John Cena versus Luke Harper, and not 1 hour got 4 million views. And it was under a 4.0 the whole show. So, I mean, you made some good points there. I mean, at this point, it's not about the WWE not having the talent. It's just them being too afraid. I know you have the stockholders and you have, you know, the sponsors and, you know, him and her and family who. But at the same time, you got to risk, you know, with great risk comes great reward, and typically. And you gotta take those three or four top names, and you have to make them big, big, big stars right now. Now is the time. Cena's, you know, he's on this, basically in his last leg as far as his career is concerned. You have CM Punk who's gone, Taker's done, Brock's part time, Jericho pops in and out, Rock is pretty much done, Triple H is part time, you know, Orton is starting to become more and more relevant as far as top names are concerned. Batista pop in, you know, here and now, and This is the first time he's been back in 4 years, and he'll probably be back for another year and a half, and that's it. Mark Henry is just a nobody now, basically. So all of your big names from 10 to 15 years ago, they're pretty much done.
They've got nothing else to go on, and he keeps saying it. John Cena is a failsafe, and he's somebody they can always go to. People know who he is. He's not a household name, but he's close enough as far as WWE is concerned. And they do need to hone on the Daniel Bryans and the Cesaros, but they probably won't. But again, is that going to really create the big celebrity that caused The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Triple H back in the day? And they need something. And, yeah, I could see why last Raw was probably the lowest-rated Raw. And they were in Britain, for crying out loud. And those were always pretty high-ranking Raws. They've always been really great Raws. This one was just a throwaway. I don't really have that much notes written on it. It was just kind of it was lame. And it's a shame to say. The state of the WWE right now just doesn't really. And they have the people there to do it. That's what drives me nuts. They have the people there that can make something of it, and you watch it and it's like, well, why did this happen instead of this? Why is Randy Orton still on top? That just doesn't do anything with the whole Divas division still, and with her throwing temper tantrums and everything. That's just, that was horrible last week, and it was just as dumb last night.
Yeah, we'll get to that in depth here soon. great analysis on the state of the WWE for sure. We start off with the first match of Cesaro defeating Sheamus. Now, I will say this on a positive note. I do like Sheamus, and I liked it from the very beginning. When Sheamus won the Royal Rumble, I was okay with it. I just prefer that someone new or someone who hasn't won the title before be the champion, like a Ryback or, you know, someone of that nature. I would have preferred to see that. Even like a Titus O'Neil, someone like Titus O'Neil, who got almost his head decapitated on SmackDown. We'll get to that soon. But I would have preferred to see somebody different. But, you know, talk about failsafe. I think Sheamus is he's a default guy to put a belt on to make work. When he had the World Heavyweight Championship, it worked. He got into some good feuds with Alberto Del Rio, one of the best Big Show feuds in his career. They had some really, really good matches at that time, and they had their match where Big Show bought the big gold ladder. That was pretty funny. But I think that Sheamus is a good person to have the U.S. Championship, and I've been just going on and on and ranting week after week about how the mid-card titles need to have some shine to it, have some prestige to it, and finally, we're getting that. There was a number one contender beat the clock challenge, which I think was a very good concept for Raw. I would give that as a positive for Raw, the fact that they're making the mid-card titles relevant again. Finally, this is the time to really, really revive the importance of the mid-card championships and hopefully Creative don't pull the plug on this go-round like they did with, you know, Big E's reign and Cesaro's first U.S. title reign and Dean Ambrose's U.S. title reign. And I really hope they don't do that. Right now they have a really, really good path in front of them when it comes to pushing the mid-card titles, giving both of them shine. And the Cesaro and Sheamus feud, I've seen differing opinions about it. A lot of people don't like it. My thing is this. First of all, I don't like Cesaro with Heyman still. I still don't like him with Heyman. But if you're going to put him with Heyman, you might as well put him in a feud with Cesaro, with Sheamus. Two Europeans beating the crap out of each other. And they speaking of chemistry, they do have chemistry. So Cesaro defeating Sheamus, most likely this will lead to a match at Payback. I think this is a good feud. I think it'll work for now, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I'll give you that much. I'm okay with it. I mean, Cesaro just does not look like a Paul Heyman guy. I mean, he's just too – he's still mid-card status. Heyman's for the main eventers, and that's pretty much about it. But the feud itself with Sheamus, it's an evenly matched, I believe. I think Sheamus could probably devour Cesaro. But keep the thing going. And with the whole Paul Heyman still talking about Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker, give it a rest. But with the interference from Paul Heyman last night with Sheamus, I mean, you're just kind of hurting Sheamus in a way. WWE is hurting Sheamus. He's a better competitor than what he has been billed as, and I know he just came back recently. But, again, Cesaro is just kind of a peanut next to an almond. Does that make sense?
I suppose. But the bottom line is, sure. The bottom line is, my client, Brock Lesnar, is the one in the 21-1 of the Undertaker's 21-1 record. It's hilarious. I think what he does, I think, is absolutely hilarious. And I definitely think that Here's the funny part. Here's the funny part. The funny part is that at first it was not – at first it was annoying to me. Now I believe that it's starting to grow on me as far as being funny. I'm going to be honest with you. I think it's funny. I still think that the whole streak idea was just ridiculous. I still believe that. However, I do think it's funny now, and we're just going to, you know, we're just going to have to deal with it. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. We're just going to have to deal with it, and there you go. So, starting to grow on me, and it's funny, but I think that eventually it will get old, but right now it's funny.
Yeah, it's funny. I agree with that, and that's pretty much all Paul Heyman has to be proud of in recent years. I mean, the whole ECW thing that was over. But I see the comedy in it. I think Cesaro would be kind of like, "Hey, why don't you shut up about this already? I'm your new guy." But until I see Brock Lesnar again, it's going to be redundant, relevant. Same thing every week.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see where Paul Heyman leads Cesaro. I'm not quite sure where he's going to be, but we'll see where it goes. Next we have. At the end, we had Sheamus attempting to shake Cesaro's hand and Cesaro faking it and walking away. Then we have Big E, the first Beat the Clock Challenge match, Big E defeating Ryback in 5 minutes and 2 seconds. The bad news is Ryback, I mean, he had an advantage for most of the match, which I'm sure that was the point, and not making him look like a complete idiot. He had the advantage, but you know, it was that big ending on Ryback was nice. And here's my thing: I always think of what can draw money. Why couldn't they do a Big E versus Ryback feud? Why couldn't they do that? Instead, we see a 5 minute and 2 second beat the clock challenge. It just makes no sense to me. I wish it would have been some type of disqualification or something like that. Save the money for the big stage. Big E versus Ryback is pure money to me. And it should have been for a mid-card title. Pure money to me. But for some reason, the WWE, they just kind of throw people away. It would just make so much more sense to me if Ryback would have won the U.S. title. Sheamus and Cesaro didn't have to be for a title. They could have just went and just could have had a good feud without a title. Big E and Ryback, that needs a title because you have two developing superstars instead of one in Cesaro. Big E and Ryback could have been a feud. Ryback could have won the U.S. title. Big E could have been a feud, but instead we see 5 minutes and 2 seconds. The positive of this is that Big E finally wins a match of this caliber. Every match that Big E wins these days, I have to really, you know, celebrate because it seems like they're few and far between as of now. But the Beat the Clock Challenge was a good idea, like I said. Way to make the Intercontinental Championship important again because you had the tournament, you know, a few weeks ago. Now you have a Beat the Clock Challenge. So I like what they're doing with that. I just wish that Big E and Ryback, that's a money feud that they missed out on.
Yeah, that's totally what they missed out on. That was a great analogy on that in commentary. Ryback and Big E could have really drawn some good money. They're evenly matched. And I was even talking about that last night when the match was going, that Ryback was somebody they put a lot of heat, or not heat, I'm sorry, a lot of push behind. Feed me more.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to all that?
Yep.
That just totally went out. I like him and Curtis Axel, the right axle tag team, because that's really all they have for him now. But if they were smart, they would let the Big E and the right back just keep going, let it ferment for a while. And, I mean, that could be a really awesome match at a good pay-per-view. But, I don't, you know, I mean, they let that kind of stuff just happen on Raw, and it becomes forgettable after a while.
Yeah, very much so. I'm surprised they had a real random match between Ryback and Big Show a few months ago, too. And I'm sitting there like, you guys are missing out on these money feuds. That was another money feud, Big Show and Ryback. Never really did anything with it. And so I really don't understand why they miss out on these money feuds and they just resort back to John Cena. I mean, that's what I just don't understand. It's just you're resorting back to John Cena, but you're missing out on money feuds. Now, they do have one potentially with Sheamus and Cesaro, but right now, as far as the Intercontinental Championship, right now I'm just seeing just random people being fed to Wade Barrett or Bad News Barrett. And although Bad News Barrett is over, and so putting the title on him is not a bad idea. However, if you're just feeding if you're just feeding people to Wade Barrett right now, what's really the point of doing all of this? Now, I got a really good feeling. I just got a feeling that RVD is going to win this, and an RVD and Bad News Barrett match at a pay-per-view is a good idea. I like it. However, I'm just not quite sure if it really is going to push Wade Barrett, if it's just another person that RVD is going to feud with and lose with during his short stint in the WWE phase two.
Yeah. I mean, Wade Barrett, I like Wade Barrett. I mean, he's growing on me, and I love to see how the Britain crowd last night just really raved him. I mean, he's never going to get a reaction like he had last night. And I even commented on that last night when I was watching Raw. So, I like Wade Barrett. I think he's going to be a mainstay for a while. I don't think he's going to be ever main event status. But prove me wrong. I mean, he could be, and I think, but, I mean, he's got the skills, definitely. He's got the talent. I mean, I could get behind somebody like him if they just really market him well and try to make him a priority. But, again, we're talking about the WWE.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Very good point there. I think that's a good point as far as, is Wade Barrett really a top guy? And that's the thing. Is he really a top guy? I'm not sure if he's really a top guy. And right, the Bad News Barrett thing is working. I like it. I'm afraid I've got some bad news. It's fun. I like it. I like it. But at the same time, it's just Bad News Barrett versus Bad News Barrett versus Daniel Bryan for the WWE Heavyweight Championship. I don't think so. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But I'll tell you what, at least, here's the thing, at least the WWE would take the risk of making him a main eventer. At least. Right now I see they're doing that with Bray Wyatt. However, he's just one of them guys that I don't know exactly what it's going to take, but Bray Wyatt as a main event guy right now, I'm sorry, I just don't see it. So we'll see. We'll see as far as Bray Wyatt come 6 months from now. It would be very interesting to see Bray Wyatt 6 months from now, where he's going to be. Hopefully not feuding with John Cena, that's for sure. Next we get R-Truth versus Fandango. Somehow the Funkadactyls come out with R-Truth. They were trying to, you know, keep the pace of they're trying to keep the pace with R-Truth, but the match really never, I mean, the match never happens because of the whole Layla and Summer Rae coming back. This really could pass to me, honestly. I understand that they're trying to make something out of this whole Total Divas thing, but I could care less if Summer Rae's trying to get with Fandango. I know Fandango's your boy, but come on, Derek. This is really, really calls you to be interested in this feud.
No, it doesn't. And, I mean, they could use Fandango for so much more. I mean, I'm talking this guy, I don't know, the Summer Rae and blah, blah, blah. I see they're doing it to push the show, the E-show, which is, I guess, pretty popular. The Fandango, again, he could do so much more, and I know you agree with me. They could use this guy to really propel the WWE in the future, and they're just using him for this shtick, so.
I could really care less. I could really care less about this.
They were getting into it last night, weren't they?
Of course, they were in Europe. It was a European crowd that really started the whole Fandangoing, because it was the European crowd that carried over from the WrestleMania last year, because WrestleMania is in the same city. I mean, the following Raw after WrestleMania is in the same city as the WrestleMania. That's just in the smaller arena. So, you know, they were still in East Rutherford, New Jersey last year. So the European crowd just got a 2-for-1. It just stayed over the next night and went over to Raw and started the whole Fandangoing craze. It was totally a Europe thing. I mean, yeah, I understand that the Jersey crowd is a smarky crowd. It's a very live crowd. Okay, I'll give you that. However, you know, the Fandangoing was totally because of the WrestleMania crowd, and basically that's what they're doing. That's what they did yesterday. I mean, they were in Europe, and the whole Fandangoing craze kept going, and it just really was just another flash of the pan for Fandango, and that's all we get. Next we get Stephanie McMahon entering promo, demanding Daniel Bryan to appear next week and relinquish the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. Now we know that Daniel Bryan did undergo surgery last Thursday, I believe it was, for his neck. They're looking about 6 to 8 weeks, most likely. So that's two pay-per-views. So he won't be back, as far as pay-per-views concerned, he won't be back till SummerSlam. It may be 4 to 6 weeks, so he may be back just in time at the best. He may be back just in time for Money in the Bank. But, like I said in my interview, don't rush it. I mean, the guy's 30, he'll be 33 in a couple of weeks, less than a couple of weeks. So, you know, he's 33 years old, just about. He has at least 10 good more years left in his career. You know, he's making these types of accomplishments only at 32. And so he's got at least a good 10 years left in his career. Don't rush it. Don't pull an Edge and have to retire, be forced to retire in his 30s because of a neck injury. Just like Austin, you know, he had to retire a bit early. He was Austin, I think his last match was what, 2000, WrestleMania 19 against The Rock. So that was 2003. So that was, you know, that was 11 years ago, and he was in his 30s. I believe he's, I think Austin's 49 now. So Austin was in his 30s when he had to retire. So he was another person who was forced to retire in his 30s because of a neck injury. So Daniel Bryan, you have two Hall of Famers in front of you that had to retire because of neck injuries. And so don't do it. Don't do it. Take your time. Don't be an Austin. Don't be an Edge. And take your time and don't have to be forced to retire in your 30s.
Yeah, don't retire in your 30s, Daniel Bryan. Get the help you need. I mean, you're somebody that can actually keep the WWE on top. Well, I mean, WWE will always be on top because they have no competition. But the
right.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, I don't think he's got anything to worry about. I mean, the crowd loves him. He's grown on me. At first, I didn't really think much about him. He's just another random Heath Slater, you know, Zack Ryder. But then he really showed me and everyone else wrong, I think. And I mean, just, people can get behind him. He's awesome. He's got nothing but a great future ahead of him. You get the rest you need. 33 isn't so bad. I believe that the couple of us here and the staff are 33. So he's got a lot going for him. He's got a lot to go. And he's going to be there. I just want to see off-topic Kurt Angle come back. I don't know why I saw that. He keeps getting injured in TNA, and he's back to WWE and finish his career. Against Daniel Bryan.
That would be phenomenal. Yeah, I agree. I mean, Kurt Angle versus Daniel Bryan would be an absolute clinic. Oh my goodness, I can't even wrap my head around just the fantasy of Kurt Angle versus Daniel Bryan. Because it doesn't seem plausible. It definitely doesn't seem probable. So, but, you know, Angle's 47 now, 45. He's 45 now. So, I mean, he can still go at it. He's just so banged up. Just had surgery last week, too. So, he'll be out for about 6 months. And at that time, you know, his contract will be up. His contract with TNA will be up. And I don't think that he will be – it doesn't seem like he'll be renewing at all. So we're looking at about October as a possible return date, October, November – as a return date, and that would require him renewing his TNA contract. TNA is just, like I said last week, they're just releasing people like nothing, important names. They're just letting them go like nothing. And so, of course, a cost-cutting measure, which, you know, 12 years in the business, continue to hear letting people go because of cost-cutting measures is not really a good sign for TNA, but you have one of your biggest names, probably next to Sting and Hogan, the biggest name in TNA, Kurt Angle. I know that Angle prefers the schedule because, you know, there's – one of the biggest reasons why he left the WWE in 2006 he left, I believe. One of the reasons why he left was because of the hectic schedule and his neck and just his health and just the schedule just wasn't allowing it to happen. And the lighter schedule for TNA, I understand it. I get it. But give him a part-time schedule. If you're giving someone like RVD a part-time schedule, you get 3 months on, 5-6 months off. Of course, someone like Kurt Angle should have that same type of schedule. To be honest with you, I don't even want to see Kurt Angle wrestle past 3 matches. I think if he comes to the WWE, if he allow his contract to be released, this is what I would do with Angle. He's 45. He's banged up. He has probably 3 to 4 really, really good matches left in him. I would definitely do a couple of Daniel Bryan, and I would do Angle Lesnar again, to be honest with you. And I would allow the last match. I would allow the last match to go to someone like maybe a Bray Wyatt. Maybe that'll work. Something, you know, possibly Cesaro. Angle and Cesaro would be just a clinic as well. So I would do that. But I would induct him in the Hall of Fame next year, to be honest with you, and let the guy retire. I mean, he's in his mid-40s, I understand, but to be honest with you, Angle was another guy who was so banged up in his 30s that it was just really, when he left in 2006, he was 37, and he was so banged up at that time. Yeah, he's had some good matches in TNA with AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels. Yeah, he's had some good matches. But Bobby Roode's another feud he had that was really good. But, you know, he has a few good matches with Sting as well. But, you know, it's TNA. I mean, as a journalist, I'm trying to be as neutral as I can. But it's TNA, so you really don't have memorable matches with TNA. I mean, not memorable matches. You have memorable matches, and you know, as far as TNA standards are concerned, but you know, you really don't look at the annals of wrestling history and say, oh yeah, that match between AJ Styles and Kurt Angle. Oh yeah, I remember that match from bell to bell. No, but you do remember Lesnar and Angle from bell to bell just about because it was under the WWE logo. So he needs a couple more, at least one more memorable match. I would love to see Daniel Bryan and Kurt Angle at WrestleMania 31. Make it happen, WWE.
Yeah, I would too. I'm glad I brought the subject up because that was just such awesome commentary. This is Pancakes and Power Slams, 90 minutes of wrestling talk. We never have enough time to just really get everything we want off our chest, but Angle and Brian would be absolutely phenomenal. And I hope we get credit rights for that if that happens.
Yeah.
But
I agree.
Yeah.
Great
good
point
Angle
there.
Run with anybody. Daniel Bryan can run with anybody, and I think the both of them together could really – I'd definitely buy that. I would
– Oh, yeah.
I would make
– Oh,
now,
yeah.
That'd be like Super Bowl almost. I mean, it would be something excellent.
Totally. Totally. They will tear the roof off. Absolutely. It'd be absolutely amazing. And it's not totally out of the scope. I think that with this surgery, you know, with some healing time, Kurt Angle will probably not renew his TNA contract. And one last hurrah in the WWE. Beginning of 2015, Kurt Angle's never won a Royal Rumble. He's got a ton of accolades, King of the Ring, World Heavyweight Champion, WWE Champion, Intercontinental Champion. He's never won a Royal Rumble. So, that would be an interesting thing to see a 46-year-old, he'll be 46 at the time, a 46-year-old Kurt Angle come back and do one last run and win the Royal Rumble. I wouldn't want to see Kurt Angle win the Royal Rumble just because it would be interesting to see, but I wouldn't want to see him win the Royal Rumble just because I still am adamant, with the exception of Chris Jericho, because I think that Chris Jericho should just win it just because he puts so many people over. But for the most part, I still think that the Royal Rumble should be won by a very uprising, it's a really upper mid-card, the future looks so gleaming bright person. I think similar to what they did with Austin and Shawn Michaels back in the mid to late 90s, that's who they should use to win Royal Rumbles. The people who they know they have such a promising future to them should be the one to win Royal Rumbles. Yokozuna, he won it because he had a bright future. Bret Hart, Bret Hart won in 94. It was a couple years after he became world champion, but at the same time, he was, Lex Luger was around, so the spotlight was kind of hogged a bit. So he was still trying to really cement himself as a top guy again. So that's the reason why he won. But Austin and Michaels in the 90s, they ruled the Royal Rumble. I mean, they won, a total of 4 Royal Rumbles in the 90s. 95, 96, 97, and 98 were all won by Austin and Michaels. So, yeah, and so that basically said it all. Even The Rock in 2000, I know he won his first title in 98, but still, he was, Rock was still trying to make, Rock was pretty over in 2000, but he was still a fresh top guy. So, yeah, I think they should really use the mid-card. Like I said, Austin and Michaels are two of the top examples. Even Batista, because when Batista won in 2005, he was a member of Evolution. He was a mid-card guy. But when he won in 2005, he broke away from Evolution, won the title, beat Triple H. So Batista and Michaels and Austin, those are three prime examples of people who, were mid-card guys. I'll even throw Benoit in there because Benoit was a mid-card guy in the WWE before he won the Royal Rumble. So those are the people who should win the Royal Rumble. Not your John Cena's coming back and, come on now. Just pointless, absolutely pointless. Even when they had Alberto Del Rio win, at least it was someone who had promise. Now, he really didn't do much. He won 2 world titles the same year and the Money in the Bank, but his title reigns are forgettable. Let's go through all real quick. Player of the Week, we're going to talk about King of the Ring. We may just make this a 3-part series because we're going to talk about King of the Ring, the whole pay-per-view lineup and the Raw tournaments after pay-per-view. So with Daniel Bryan out, maybe a tournament or a battle royal is in the works to crown a new champion. So why not talk about King of the Ring? So we're going to touch on King of the Ring. At least we're going to do half of the pay-per-view series of King of the Ring, and most likely we'll finish it up next week. So stay tuned for the flavor of the week at the end of the show. Let's zoom through Raw before we get there. We have Rusev defeating Heath Slater in the Union Jack costume. Real quick, Derek. Do you see any promise in Rusev?
No, I don't see any promise in Rusev. It just kind of reminds me of Rocky IV with Ivan Drago and Bridget, who eventually married Sylvester Stallone. But I don't see anything with it, and especially going up against somebody in the Union Jack costume with Heath Slater. I mean, Heath Slater, he's been a jobber for a long time now, and Rusev going against someone like that, I just don't see much promise in this character.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. Totally agree. All right, RVD versus Alberto Del Rio. RVD pins Alberto Del Rio in less than 5 minutes and 2 seconds to advance to the Intercontinental Title Beat the Clock Challenge. Next, we have Seth Rollins defeating Batista by disqualification. Shield versus Evolution feud. Has it gone too far? Is it still some life in it? What do you think?
There's life in it, but only because the WWE wants you to think there's life in it. I think the Shield is far above Evolution at this point, and they always have been. And again, I'm glad for RVD to win the IC Championship, beat the clock. Good for RVD, and I like that. And again, Evolution is just kind of a fart in the past.
Yeah. Alicia Fox defeating Paige, I think for the first time in 112 episodes, I'm going to allow Derek to do commentary on the Divas. What do you have, Derek?
Yeah, you know what? I get Paige. I mean, she lost last night, but again, it wasn't a title match. But you have Alicia Fox. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Give me a break. But these temper tantrums, you're not doing anything. Yeah, you want to plug the show on E, which Paige should probably be a part of. And Paige is absolutely – who's AJ Lee? That's what I'm saying. I almost forgot about AJ Lee. Paige is just totally being dominant right now. I'm glad this is happening with the Divas division, and Alicia Fox can just take her gimmick and go home. And it's, you know, all for Paige. Good for her. I'm excited. I'm actually excited you wanted me to talk about the Divas tonight because I had something to say.
Yeah,
and
indeed.
347-884-452.
Absolutely. 347-884-8452. Or tweet at Crave Wrestling or join into the live chat that we have. Speaking of live chat, what wrestling company did Eric Bischoff work for before WCW? Again, what wrestling company did Eric Bischoff work for before WCW? All right, next we have Dolph Ziggler against Mark Henry. No one wins in a lot of time, so that allows RVD to advance. You just covered that. RVD comes out to celebrate, but he gets attacked by Bad News Barrett. He gets a bullhammer elbow by Bad News Barrett as he was celebrating, and Bad News Barrett had to RVD some time to hear him let RVD know that he's afraid he's got some bad news.
Well, his bad news is that he's going to have to face RVD. And RVD's been doing really good in the tournament. He did awesome, beat the clock. I'm kind of excited for this match. I think Barrett and RVD is going to put on a heck of a show and probably be the highlight of Payback.
You know what? I think you got something going there. Actually, I think that this match has definitely the ability to be one of the best matches on the ticket for sure. So I'm gonna have to agree with you on that. I think this is going to be a sleeper match. I think this has the ability to steal the show. Adam Rose in-ring interview interrupted by Jack Swagger and Zeb Coulter. I tell you what, man, Europe did it. Europe saved Adam Rose because last week the crowd just wasn't really feeling him. as much. And again, you know, he's NXT, and not a lot of people know too much about Adam Rose, just because, you know, you have a chunk who has the network, but not many are really NXT followers, which they're missing out, because NXT has an amazing talent pool of wrestlers. It's a good show. But Adam Rose is my guy. I mean, I really, really am a Rosebud. I really like Adam Rose. And I've said it before, just a stark contrast from his Leo Kruger gimmick. But, you know, the guy's, you know, 35, he'll be 35. And so now or never, really. It really boils down to this is his time to make a name for himself as far as going up on the main roster. And I think it's about time. He'll be 35 this summer. But I think it's about time for a near 35-year-old guy to really have his time. And it's good to see him on the main roster. And like I said, Europe saved him, because it wasn't really a good sign last week, but of course the European crowd saves them. They do the dance, they do the music, they do it all. They're into it, they knew it, and I loved it, and it was great. It was absolutely great to see it. He actually interviewed Renee Young, which is really funny, and it just was awesome. And the guy's not even British. He's South African, which is very interesting. A lot of people think that he's British, but he's South African. So it's really interesting that, you know, he has the accent that gelled well right with them. And so it was great. I was a big fan of the segment, and I really hope that they do something big with Adam Rose. I don't see him as a top guy, but mid-card title, I can definitely see that happening.
You can see that happening. That's what I saw at Fandango year and a half ago when he debuted. Adam Rose, he's got it. But again, with this whole party thing and disputing with Zeb Coulter, I don't think it's going to do much for him. It's one of those where, like, when they brought in the Braves, and I mean, the promotion was absolutely awesome. When they actually came out to do their thing, kind of fell flat. I hope that doesn't happen to Adam Rose. But, no, it was good. It was a good time. I enjoyed seeing it. And I enjoy him coming out and spreading his good cheer, Rosebud.
Indeed. Absolutely. Because it's party time all the time. And next we have the main event, John Cena defeating Luke Harper by disqualification. Cena attacked by Wyatt family. I really like the snap Sister Abigail that he just planted on all three of them. That was very impressive for Bray Wyatt. But, I mean, you know, the Usos is such an amazing tag team. And I understand, I'm okay with Rowan and Harper versus the Usos. I'm okay with it. But just plugging the Usos with John Cena, man, that's just, I mean, that's career suicide as far as being, I mean, the Uso chants, you know, those are very catchy. They still work. But, I mean, just pairing the Usos with John Cena, oh, I mean, they might get some heel heat quicker than they can imagine with that type of pairing. But it was okay, you know. And to end Raw like this again with the Cena Wyatt family, it's just kind of force feeding us this feud that it's just not really clicking.
Doesn't click. And again, since Wyatts have been there, it's just kind of, what are they here for? I mean, I get the old singing and the chants and yada yada. But, however, with the Usos and with John Cena can do a lot better than just hanging out with the Usos. I mean, it's almost like a step back for him. pardon me saying that. But well, Brainerd Feared starts singing Whole World in His Hands. It's Raw just ended on a bad note, and it started on a bad note. This was not a Raw to really say it's one for the ages.
Yeah. Real quick, SmackDown, takeaways from SmackDown, more Cena and Bray. Usos and Rose Brothers was a decent match. Rose Brothers was playing the heel role a little bit. It really seems like they're just slowly but surely turning Cody back to a heel. Never really got a chance to establish himself as a babyface, which is, once again, the WWE pulling the plug on something that could be that could have been very good. El Torito defeating, pinning Heath Slater again. That was just absolutely horrible. More Nikki Bella and Natalya, Total Divas crap. Just they're giving Natalya the shaft again. Doesn't make any sense. And like I said before, Titus O'Neil almost got decapitated, got pinned in seconds by Sheamus after cutting his promo. And at the end of the day, Titus O'Neil turning heel was just ridiculous because it meant nothing. I like Santino, but for him to be the open challenge for Damian Sandow, I think Adam Rose would have been a perfect person to fill that challenge. But we get Santino, and we get another loss by Sandow. Cesaro just squashing R-Truth, and then another ending with John Cena and the Wyatt family. They're just really trying to make this one of the top feuds, especially since Daniel Bryan's gone. It's just not working. It is just not working at all. Then we see the on, and I wrote on wrestling.com about MVP's new stable with Bobby Lashley and Kenny King. I think it's absolutely horrible. I don't like it at all. And then we got a Bully Ray and EC3 feud coming along, which I'm okay with that, actually. But just this MVP turning heel that quick and then really kind of hurrying up and having him be the top heel to go against Eric Young. And now you have two lackeys and Kenny King and now who I now call Lackey Lashley. For Bobby Lashley to be a lackey of MVP is basically screaming TNA saying, hey, Bobby Lashley, you're a big name in our eyes. We don't know where to put you, but you're a big name. You're a big enough name to pay you money for. So just, I'll tell you what, man, it's really hard for me to say many positive things about Impact Wrestling and TNA. And it's hard for me to keep the neutral point as a journalist, but and I really, really hope the best for TNA. That's the thing. But it's just something about TNA. It's just something in the air about TNA that just screams stepping further and further backwards. And it's hard. What wrestling company did Eric Bischoff work for before WCW, Derek? Did I stump him? Did I stump the host?
No.
Yes, I think I did. Yes. 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 We got some answers in the trivia that are incorrect as well. We got someone saying Mid-South, someone saying WWF.
WWF.
None of those are correct. He was a commentator for the AWA. You're kidding.
Yeah, he was.
Come on.
WWE.
But he was a commentator for the AWA. That's where he really got his break.
Then there's one answer.
No. The correct
yeah,
answer
is
the AWA. Yeah, nah, you can fake it all you want. It was the wrong answer. All right, can you get a ring, 1993? Real quick, we're going to do about four of these today. And then we're going to continue the rest of the King of the Ring series next week with part three of Pancakes and Power Slams. Last week we talked about the non-aired King of the Rings from 85 to 91. This week we're going to talk about the first pay-per-view of King of the Ring. It was 93. Bret Hart won the King of the Ring. He defeated Razor Ramon. And he defeated Mr. Perfect, which was an amazing match, almost 20 minutes. And Bam Bam Bigelow went almost just as long. I mean, talk about your endurance with Bam Bam Bigelow. I remember that match. It was a good match. It almost went 20 minutes as well. But the 93 King of the Ring was had a pretty good potential as far as the bracket is concerned. Luger was in there. Perfect was in there. Razor was in there. Tito Santana. It was a good bracket as far as mid-card superstars are concerned. But Bret Hart winning the pay-per-view was – Bret Hart winning the King of the Ring was definitely a good idea. He was – like I said, he was champ, and he won his first championship before the King of the Ring, but he was still a fresh top guy, and he was really trying to make himself known. And so I think it was a good idea for him to win the King of the Ring.
Oh, of course it was. That was a great idea. I mean, Bret Hart at that time was the cream of the crop for the WWE, and he was for many years after that. And for him and Kurt Hennig, the two of them together, I mean, their Intercontinental Championship match at SummerSlam 91, then you have King of the Ring in 93. I mean, they could tear the house down, make the absolute best.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's been any two wrestlers together that could really have a chemistry that they did when they were in the match. And it absolutely phenomenal. I mean, Bret Hart won. He was already champion before, but all the props to him. I mean, that was his time. Kurt Hennig made that Bret Hart's time.
Yeah. I would debate Angle and Benoit because Angle and Benoit was magic.
Yeah, that's great. One of the best was Bret and Hennig. I mean, I'd probably be almost top five just in-ring chemistry, period.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think Angle Benoit. I think Bret and Perfect. That would be a good. We'll spend some time on that and the best chemistry wrestlers. That would be a good Flavor of the Week topic. I think we definitely have Bret and Perfect. We definitely have Angle Benoit. I'm sure there's Austin Rock is definitely another one. So we'll go further into that and break
Flair.
That down a little bit. I think that's a Steamboat and Flair. Oh, yeah. I don't know, man. I think Steamboat and Flair might beat Bret and Perfect actually. But yeah, we'll go further into that. That's another Flavor of the Week topic. We'll have a top 5 or 10. I think that's a great topic to really delve into and spend more time talking about for sure. All right, 1994, we have Bret's brother Owen winning the King of the Ring. Bret was not in the King of the Ring in 94. Razor Ramon still was. Bam Bam still was. But we definitely had Luger was in the King of the Ring as well. But we had a different array of superstars. Owen Hart, we had Crush, we had Mabel, we had Pierre from the Quebecers at that time, or Pierre Ouellette. We had R&R Shyster, Sparky Plug, or Bob Holly, whoever, whatever you want to call them. So it wasn't as star-studded as 93, or it wasn't as big-named, or at least athletic. It wasn't as athletic as 93 was because you had a lot of Scott Steiner. At that time, he wasn't as massive as he ended up being. So he's athletic. But you had Mabel in there. Pierre Ouellette was, he was, for his size, he was athletic. But, Doink the Clown, Crush, Tatanka, 1-2-3 Kid was in there. He actually made it to the Final Four. The finals was Razor Ramon and Owen Hart. Relatively fast match. It was under 10 minutes. So it wasn't the showcase of matches wasn't as long. I think the longest match at that time was Crush and Tatanka. That was nearly 20 minutes, but it was just random. It was just 5-10-minute matches. So it didn't showcase the ability as much as 93, but it was a great decision to make Owen Hart the King of the Ring, because this really made it, you know, the King, the heel turn, the King of Hearts, the Slammy Awards. This really propelled Owen Hart's career. I would probably say that Owen Hart was one of the best beneficiaries of winning a King of the Ring pay-per-view, King of the Ring tournament, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Owen Hart, but 94 King of the Ring was more gimmick heavy than probably any of the other King of the Rings. I mean, it was just gimmicks. You didn't have potential wrestlers like you did in 92, 93, 95, 96, and that was King of the Ring then. Owen Hart, all the props to him. Maybe still probably, I mean, the future could have been bright for that guy, even after 1999, but it was a good pay-per-view, but again, it was gimmick-heavy. It did not have anything to do with really wrestling skill, and it was just kind of a cartoon pay-per-view.
Yeah, I would have actually said the same thing for 95. I remember Jacob Blue was in there, Mantar, Duke the Dumpster, Drosy, Billy Gimmick, the Roadie was in there, Doink, Luger was in the King of the Ring again for the third year. Still, he had a knack of being a King of the Rings, but he just didn't manage to to win them. But it was still gimmick heavy. The biggest thing I remember from the 95 King of the Ring was the clean pin of Mabel and the Undertaker. I remember that very vividly. I was just so surprised that Mabel went over the Undertaker, and he actually ended up winning the entire King of the Ring. He beat Savio Vega, who was a very upstart wrestler and had a good feud with Austin not too far after that. So I think that's around that time, Savio Vega had a feud with Austin. I think it was 96. But I think I remember the pin of Taker and Mabel, but I would say that Mabel was probably one of the worst. I mean, you know, rest in peace, Nelson Fraser. But you know, as far as the Mabel character, the heel turn Mabel was probably one of the best Mabel characters. But overall, as far as it benefiting someone's career, I would say that Mabel's one of the worst King of the Ring winners for sure.
Yeah, he was the worst. I want to take back. 95 was just as bad as 94. And Mabel, I mean, what did they have in store for him when he wins King of the Ring? Is he going to go on to be champion? I mean, what did they have in mind for him? And he went on to be Viscera, which was a little more diabolical than Mabel. And again, Mabel, that's a woman's name. I mean, that just doesn't was not a good choice for King of the Ring. But he won it. Props to him, 1995. But 1996
was a bit different. It was more of a mid-card. It was a mid-card wrestler's dream. It really was at that time. You had some decent names. You had Jannetty. You had Jake Roberts in there. The Ultimate Warrior actually was in the King of the Ring. Vader, Ahmed Johnson, Bradshaw, JBL when he was the Bradshaw character. Triple H was in the King of the Ring. He actually had a decent match with Jake Roberts. So it was decent. Mark Marrow. Yokozuna was in there. He quickly lost to Owen Hart. I remember that match. I was kind of bewildered at the time. At that time, they were just kind of – Yokozuna was on his decline, and he really wasn't getting over at the time. But, of course, 1996 was, I would say, the most memorable King of the Ring of the entire series, because that was the advent of Austin 316 defeating Jake Roberts in less than 5 minutes after just beating the crap out of his ribs and just really beating him up before the match and getting him in the Stone Cold Stunner. And then the memorable Austin 316 speech with Doc Hendricks, better known as Michael P.S. Hayes. So, yeah, absolutely. It was definitely a big, big turnaround from 93, 94,
and 95. Yeah, 96, like you said, was probably the best, almost said Royal Rumble, best King of the Ring. I mean, that just changed everything. That was almost like when Hulk Hogan turned on Randy Savage at Bash at the Beach in 95 and created the New World Order. I mean, that was a turning point in wrestling. That sole pay-per-view itself in that 2 minutes that Austin gave his speech at the end and said Austin 316, and just that was it. Wrestling was changed after that.
Absolutely. Real quick, Mankind defeated The Undertaker at 96, and Shawn Michaels was shooting against the British Bulldog and had a really good match, almost lasted a half an hour. Really good match. So 96 was, all in all, it's a pretty good King of the Ring match. All right, we're gonna stop there. We're gonna stop off at the 96 Royal Rumble. 97 on, we'll talk about and finish up next week. So stay tuned. Thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for all of the Facebook sites and all of the affiliates. WeAreWrestling.net. The list goes on. Of course, me, Wrestling.com, Bleach Report, Crave Wrestling at Twitter. Follow Crave Wrestling. Until next week, Daddy Loves Elijah. Have a great week and enjoy Eureka Wrestling. God bless. Goodbye.